Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Suave.
I've been in my bag for a while, I'm invincible. Story of a young boss grinding, shit get critical. Calling on my bros one time, cause you special. I had some hood dreams and right rounds for my mentor. Every target that I shoot is on point like a pencil. Different route, changed relationships, I'm so sorry. Came up from the trenches and I made it, I say hardly. Now
it's down to the last four teams. Bet Online has been your tournament bracket headquarters all March long. And now that we're almost down to the finals, we've still got a lot more in store. MLB is here, and NBA and NHL playoffs are around the corner. As always, BetOnline is the number one source for your summer sports wagering. Head to BetOnline today to stay updated on all the action, and remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Alrighty, guys, we are back with another episode of the What's In Your Bag podcast presented by BetOnline. I'm your host, Andrew Robinson, and we are joined again by our wonderful, wonderful co-host, Alexis Davis. Alexis, thank you for coming on with us today. Good to see you.
Excited to be here.
Yes. Now, before we introduce our special guest for today, you know we got to get the business out of the way. So if you're watching this on YouTube or hearing this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, go ahead and stop what you're doing. Tap that subscribe button. It goes a long, long way. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell a friend to tell a friend, et cetera, et cetera. That was my guy, Pull Up Tay, on the intro. It's going to be him on the outro as well. Make sure you guys are streaming his music. One of the hottest up-and-coming artists out of the DMV. But now, since we got the housekeeping out of the way, guys, we are pleased to be joined by somebody who I can personally say I'm super, super excited to have on. Somebody who I've been a super, super fan of and everything that she's been able to do with her work, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with if you're watching this episode. But we are pleased to be joined by McLean West, who is the founder of Soul Supper, and she's also the head of branded content at the NBA. So, Mac, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yes. Honestly, can say for me, you know, obviously meeting you at All-Star Weekend was super, super dope. I was like, wait, hold on, like, that's what I think it is. It was crazy when we first met. But also, I got to give a shout out to Jessica Camille, who we're going to talk about a little bit later in the episode, because we had her on the podcast a few weeks back, and she gave you a wonderful, wonderful, like, 2 or 3 minute shout out on the episode. So I'll have to, we'll get to that a little bit later. But I always love it when kind of worlds come together and like the All Facts family just brings people together. And also what you're doing with Soul Supper is connecting people. So I feel like it's fitting that we're on the podcast today. So we're definitely excited to have you on and chit chat a bit.
I am so excited. I think after meeting you at All-Star, you were the first person ever to come up to me and be like, are you the Soul Supper girl? I was like, oh my God, you made my entire year. And I've just been super engaged in, you know, listening to the podcast, watching it. And I'm thrilled. I think both what you and Alexis are doing, you guys are crushing it. So I'm excited.
I appreciate it. Now, before we get into the nitty gritty of the episode and talk about Soul Supper and the NBA, obviously, as of this recording, it's March Madness and the NCAA tournament is full-fledged. So I wanted to ask you, are you watching it at all? Men's or women's tournament? Have you tuned in to any games? And what are your thoughts so far on the tournament?
Absolutely. I have Houston winning for men's and I have South Carolina winning for women's. It's interesting. I just saw a video that was on social and it was a guy prompting basically everyone who's watching, like, name a college player. And everyone in the comments, like, Caitlin Clark, and there's not one men's player who's named. And even though I work at the NBA, just seeing how well women's players have been marketed, I think, this season, and then going into the draft, like, I think this is probably going to be the most watched WNBA draft, I think, that we'll have. So it's really amazing to see just, like, women's sports where it's constantly growing, and as a former athlete, to just see how there's so much media attention. And it's like, I have ESPN on and I'm watching women's games over men's games. And to see that ESPN has all women's games and then you have to kind of, like, dig to find the men's games, it's really been a great pivot to see for women's sports. So it's exciting to watch.
Yeah. So, Alexis, how about you? I know you obviously been following the action and stuff. What are you most looking forward to? Obviously, I know we got the well, the Sweet 16 is almost set. I know there are 18 that are locked in for the women's tournament so far. Eight more are going to be locked in today. But as far as the women's tournament goes, what have you been looking forward to, and what are you kind of excited about with the tournament going on?
I think for me, it's been interesting because it's kind of like the seniors are really good and the freshmen are really good. So I think that's like an interesting dynamic. How not to say that there aren't like in the women's game that there aren't talented like sophomores and juniors, but I just think that it's so interesting that the freshman class is stacked and the senior class is stacked. But the fact that the freshman class is stacked keeps me excited because I think that that means that all these programs have longevity and they have a future. So it's not like, okay, you have this major draft class. Now all that viewership is now transferred to the WNBA and now nobody's watching women's college basketball. But since the freshmen are still good, it's like, okay, now it's like it gives people an excuse to watch both. You have this senior class that's getting ready to go into the WNBA. So now the WNBA gets more viewers. And then you have this freshman class that's in college that's going to all be sophomores. So that keeps the viewership with college basketball too. So I think it's a win-win. As far as the tournament goes, so I have South Carolina winning, but I have South Carolina and USC in the championship in Cleveland. So
I'm gonna
yeah, and
look.
it's funny because it's like, what'd you say?
I was like, I don't know who I have. Oh, I have South Carolina over Colorado. I was like, I thought I had
Okay.
USC the same matchup as you, but it was Colorado.
Yeah,
See.
so I have USC. And it's because it's funny because the men's Final Four is actually going to be in Phoenix, and usually I would be like ecstatic about that, but I'm like, dang, like I'd rather be in Cleveland, because I got to go to the Final Four last year when like when it was like this big thing or whatever. And but yeah, just the fact that the men's Final Four is here, and I wish that I was in Cleveland is definitely a different statement.
See,
Yeah,
I'm a
I
little
can
bit
tell you're one men's
I'm
player
good.
right now.
No, it is. It was crazy. I saw something that said like the women's tournament has sold like six times more tickets than the men's Final Four. I saw that. I was like, yo, six times? Sheesh. But I was disappointed though because I saw that. I'm looking at the brackets. I'm like, all right, let's see what these matchups is coming. And if hopefully they win, but it's looking like we might get Iowa versus LSU in the Elite Eight instead of the like Final Four or National Championship game. And then it's going to be, if they win, Juju versus Paige Bueckers is in the Elite Eight. So I'm like, I wish this was a Final Four. Like, I want to see, I wish all four of them committed to the Final Four, as opposed to like now two of them are gonna have to lose before. But I'm hoping that we get that Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark rematch, because that's gonna be spicy. And then you have this whole thing with, I'm sure you guys saw it with Kim Mulkey, that's unfolding, this whole Washington Post article. I'm like, oh man, the tea is hot right now.
The tea is hot.
No, it's crazy. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the rematch for sure. Now the tournament's been great so far, and I got UConn winning the men's tournament, and I got South Carolina winning the women's tournament. So hopefully all three of our predictions will come right with that. But I do want to ask you, obviously I want to change gears a little bit. And before we get into the Soul Soap series again, I think that one thing that I think is important to highlight is that people speak very highly of you and your character, and just the person that you're on. I think it speaks obviously to obviously what you're doing with Soul Supper. But I want to read something that you have on your website that kind of like you wrote about yourself, and I wanted to ask you about it. So on your personal website, you describe yourself as a creative by nature, an athlete by grit, a cook by trial and error, a student by saying yes to more, a philanthropist by giving until it hurts, and a human by experience. And for me, I feel like that was super powerful, but especially like the last line of it when you were talking about, well, I guess the last three sentences, a student by saying yes to more, a philanthropist by giving until it hurts, and a human by experience. So I kind of wanted to ask you, like, what does that mean to you? And if you could just expound upon that a little bit more, because I think that it's such a beautiful way to describe yourself, but I want to hear more about just, the person and kind of what I guess each of those phrases kind of means to you.
A really great question. I've never been asked that question. I think my parents have they raised I have three other siblings, and I think they raised all of us to you're a human first, and then you're kind of whatever you are interested in after that. And My mom has this saying, and she says grit, grace, and gratitude. And so grit is you work hard, and so that kind of goes to like a student by saying yes to more, or a creative by nature. It's like I'm working my ass off. Can I swear on this?
You can.
With like a student saying yes to more is like I'm going to say yes to any opportunity. I'm going to raise my hand for extra opportunities just so I can get as much experience as possible. And that's, putting your head down, working hard, having grit. So I think that that's the first. And then grace is you get to be graceful in every situation, in every encounter that you have. And I think my mom is probably the most graceful human I've ever seen. And to see her in a boardroom or in a classroom showing so much grace to people, that kind of goes with the philanthropist so giving until it hurts is I want to show grace in every possible room that I'm in because I want, like you said, people have great things to say about me. Like I hope that's what people say. And then I think a human by experience is, and I have this kind of saying every single time I have a soul supper is we're all human. We're all searching, we're all hurting, we're all going through life and experiencing these things, sometimes like the first time around. And if you have gratitude and you show grace in every situation, you're going to be thankful no matter what. You are going to have grace no matter what. And so I think it's always a reminder. It's like, I'm going through life just as, both of you are, and it's my first time around. And so it's just kind of a reminder that like we all are human at the end of the day. And sometimes people don't always fully understand that or go into relationships or encounters with that.
I think that I don't know. I feel like that's a great way to just look at life in general, But we mentioned Jessica earlier, and when we were on the interview with her, and she was talking about you, she was like, "Yo, like she literally has like saved my life." Like that was a direct quote. Like she saved my life in so many ways. And she talked about just your ability to connect people. And she was like, "Yo, like when you talk to Mac, like you could be talking to her about the most random thing, and in her mind, she's already thinking about like how she could help you, or oh, you should do this, or like this." And it's like, I want to know where does that come from? Because I feel like in today's society, everybody's always thinking about me, 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 me. And especially when we're young, at the end of the day, it's not wrong to be selfish. It's not wrong to kind of worry about, all right, what's my next move? But I feel like you're somebody who always puts other people first. And I just want to know where that comes from. How do you have such a selfless personality about you? Because I think that it's not something that a lot of people possess. A lot of people are kind of like, well, I'm gonna step over this person in order to get to where I'm trying to go. So it's refreshing to come across people that put other people first and want to help other people. And I think that that's something that I'm super curious to just hear from you about is where exactly that comes from.
Yeah. First of all, Jess, if you're watching, love you so much. I think that empathy is the root of it all. I am an ENFJ. If you've taken Myers-Briggs, like your personality, I guess, code. And like I'm an ENFJ. And so empathy drives me. And it's always, I think my sister and both my, I think all my siblings and I are all kind of empaths in a way where it's like I always want to make the people around me feel good. And that's also why that kind of drove me to start Soul Supper is like I love cooking for people. And I want to say it was probably in college where I started seeing people who I look up to, whether it's friends, family, mentors. And I always saw that connection was the base of that. And it was the, I think, the fuel behind the relationships, the partnerships that they were working on. And I realized that this is a relationship business. And I actually just spoke to a college last week and I talked about how relationships matter. And I think seeing how my parents have gone about business and seeing how they've put such an emphasis on relationships, you realize like the work that we do is all relationship based. And like when you and I met at All Star or even Alexis, now knowing that you also work in basketball too, it's like you instantly have this commonality with one another. And I think when it comes to trying to connect as many people as possible, I just want to make cool things with my friends. And I think supporting friends is so important. I think collaboration is also sometimes it's undervalued. And so when I'm seeing friends, family, mentors having these like such great relationships, and I just didn't see that they're optimizing them, where I was like, you're in such a unique place in life where like you could work with these people and create a larger project or this awesome collab. And I think it kind of goes to almost like street art in a way, where like we grew up watching Virgil do all these different collabs, and you realize like he wanted his whole team to win. So having that kind of in the back of my mind, I'm like, I just want to connect people. I want to see people succeed. I think when it comes to Jess's standpoint is Jess and I became close. We both worked at Bleacher Report. And I think when we were so early on in our careers, we weren't necessarily given opportunity that I think that we wish we could have had. And I didn't take it upon myself then, but now I'm like, no, I'm going to fight for that opportunity, or I'm going to fight for Jess to have an opportunity, because it's what we deserve. It's what we've worked for. And so when you mention people's names and rooms that they're not in, not in a bad way, but like, hey, you should work with this person, I think it's only going to uplift and just have the whole team win. So that's kind of my perspective in a very long-winded way.
Yeah, I love that though. And I think that I wish we need more people that have that mentality, you know, in the world. But you kind of segued it perfectly into Soul Supper. So I definitely want to just get right into it and ask you about that because you, I guess, when you talk about Soul Supper, right, you describe it as a human connection brand that connects the community to heal and grow their souls. So I want to know, like, heal and grow your soul, that's like a super powerful statement. So I want to know, like, when you were thinking about like, all right, I want to start Soul Supper, was it like an event or something that was going on in society that was like, yo, like, we need this, we need more of this, we need something like this? Or was it kind of something that you always had in the back of your mind? Like, I guess take me back to the inception point of Soul Supper and what went into the creation of it to where you were like, yo, this is something that we need in our society.
Yeah. I think the crowded table mindset is something that I've always grown up with, is like, I always want to have a crowded table. I think that those are the best holidays that I've had, or the best family dinners that I've had. And during 2019, I was living in New York. I was working in sports, and I felt like all of my friendships and relationships reflected my work. And I didn't really have anyone who knew what I was struggling with or things that I was working on, what were my superpowers. And I think that the relationships that I had reflected how I was showing up in rooms. I didn't really feel like I was my most authentic self. And I had some family things that happened in 2019, and I didn't really have anyone in New York to lean on to say, hey, let's go grab a cup of coffee, or let's go sit down and have a meal where we're not, trying to get drunk. And or go on a walk. And I didn't really have anyone to squeeze me a little tighter and say, like, it's okay, like we got this. So COVID, luckily, I think hit at a really good time for me personally, is because I was able to go home. I was able to quarantine with my family. And supper, and I say this in every interview, is supper is the most important part of the day at my family. All of my siblings and I played sports, my parents worked, but it was a time for us to come together and just connect with one another. And it was, we were disconnected from, our world. So we weren't on our phones, we weren't distracted, and we were having such great conversation with my family and friends and whoever would also join. And I realized during COVID, we had supper with each other every single night. And that was my parents' one rule, is like, you can be in our house, but you have to show up for supper. And in the conversations I was having, they were super transformative. We were talking about political climate, we were talking about, if you had a superpower, what would it be? Like, the conversation ranges at our supper table, but I realized we didn't have, one, an experience, and two, a forum for people to really have those transformative discussions and feel supported and heard from community. So I moved to LA. I was like, I'm going to get whatever apartment I can to fit a dining room table that seats 12. I'm sitting at it now. It's my favorite thing. It's the only thing I'll ever take with me from apartment to apartment. But it was a way for me to have almost kind of like a fresh start, where I was like, I'm building a community from the ground up. So every Thursday, I would invite whoever wanted to come. It was an open door policy to come and eat at my supper table. And I would cook for the five people or the 15 people who would show up. And I realized the supper table is the foundation for connection. and food unites all of us. And it's always a common topic that's brought up at every Soul Supper is it doesn't matter what culture you're from, food is always the one thing that unites everyone. And like you'll see sometimes like it's like rice and a meat or like a starch and a meat. That's across every culture. And it's really great to see how food brings those people together. And so that's how I started it. I was doing family dinner every Thursday, and I'm a brand marketer at the end of the day. And I was like, I gotta brand this. I gotta have, there needs to be a thematic, there needs to be a brand associated. And so I just kind of ran with it.
And I think that when I hear that, I find that brings back so many just connections and light bulbs in my head. And I think the first thing is, I definitely want to ask Alexis about this too, because I'm curious to hear her perspective. But I never forget kind of a little brief tangent, but I remember during COVID, or maybe right around COVID as well, like, so my mom passed away in 2016, long story short. And after that, I kind of was adopted, quote unquote, by like my aunt and uncle, who are like my best friends, mom and dad from high school. And they're like my aunt passing Uncle Reggie. They're like, a second mom and dad to me, And it was crazy though, because like when I grew up, I didn't grow up in a situation to where like we had like dinner every night. You know what I mean? Like, my mom was sick, like God bless her heart. Like she would cook on the nights that she was up to and that she could, but other nights it was kind of like you gotta figure it out, And the people who I went to school with and stuff were kind of, we all were from the same community, like a low income neighborhood. So everybody kind of had that same experience. But when my mom passed away and I moved in with my aunt passing Uncle Reggie, we would eat dinner like every night, especially during COVID. Like I remember I was dating this girl at the time, and we did it in high school, but she had came back to the crib like later, a couple, like after, I think after my mom passed or something like that. And like we had food that I cooked. And she came through the door, and at this time I had been there living there for maybe 2 or 3 years. So I'm like used to like the dinners, and like we had like the tablecloths and the decorated plates and all that kind of stuff at the house. And she came over and she sat down and she was like, yo, like this is so crazy. Like, thank you guys so much for having me. Like, I've never in my entire life, like, we might have been 20 years old. I've never sat at a table with my family and like had dinner, like ever. Like we was like, all right, you might get some food and go sit on the couch or like whatever the case may be. And it just never dawned to me like dang, there's families that really do this like every night or every week, like that come together as a family and like eat together. That was never something that was like a norm for me or like the girl that was at the table either. It was like, yo, this is my first time in my entire life. It just happened. And it just made me realize the amount of like conversations, the amount of things that you can just bond over as a family over dinner, over or supper, however you call it. But I don't know. I think for me to hear, I guess, your perspective on that, Meg, and like how dinner was so important to you, I'm curious to know, like, even for you, like, what was your, I guess, experience or like with dinner or growing up and stuff like that? Do you think that that's something that, I guess, now that you are an adult, it's something that you feel like is super important, like with a family dynamic? Like, what do you think about that?
Was that a
I would
question
say
for
for,
okay.
yeah, I want to ask both of you
oh,
guys.
yeah. Yeah, well, I would just say for me, I think that, well, me and my mom, like, we did eat dinner all the time, like, together at the table. And I think that even if, like, for instance, like, I was one of those kids that was always in, like, so many activities. Like, so I, for a long time, like, I battled with choosing if I wanted to dance or do basketball. So for a while, I was doing both. So I would go to school and then I would have dance class after school. Then I would have basketball practice at school. Then I would go to AAU practice. So my mom kind of did like a little bit of both where we would eat fast food together. But like when we would eat the fast food together and we would be here, there, everywhere, she would come in the back seat with me and we would like eat the food. Like even if it's like Chick-fil-A, she would come in the back seat with me and we would eat the food in the back seat. So it's still like, I just would look at it as like when we were like on the go like that. I guess like our table looked different, but her, parking the car in the parking lot, coming to sit in the back seat with me, I think it still kind of created that sense of connection where it's not like even just the difference that it created with like 'cause she could have just kept driving past me, my food in the back seat, and it just kept going. And then that, and it's like, okay, my child is fed, whatever. But the fact that she would park in the parking lot, come sit in the back seat with me, and we would eat, or there'd be times with like, let's say if it is a sandwich, like something that you don't have to heat up, she would still like pack the food and she would come in the back and sit. So I think for me, it was kind of a, it kind of served a different purpose because it was a chance for us to like just kind of take a deep breath. Because I think a lot of times, even now, like as an adult, like even with all three of our schedules, we're here, there, everywhere. Like right now, I'm thinking about what I got to do at 10. Like it's just like you're here, there, everywhere. So I think sometimes like us sitting down in the parking lot like that, it allowed us to just like be present in the moment and not think about like, okay, I got to hurry up and eat my food because now we got to go from Bowie. We got to go all the way to Waldorf for, and for those that don't know, that's like 55 minutes. We have to go 55 minutes to AAU practice. And then we have an hour and 20 minute drive back home. And honestly, with all that going on, it could have been easy for my mom to say like, okay, I'm not packing a lunch. I'm not cooking dinner. We're just going to eat fast food every day. So I do think it did take an extra level of intentionality for her to make sure that, you know, it wasn't just like, let's alternate McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, Burger King every 3 days and then repeat, you know. And obviously as a growing child, that's not really what you're supposed to do anyway, but I give parents a lot of grace because sometimes stuff is hard, you know, you can't cook every day. I did have one question for you, Mac, about with your idea to have Soul Supper, just the fact that like it went from an idea of you feeding your friends to now it's something that you market, you have all types of people that come and sit at the table. What kind of gave you that confidence to take it from your living room to venue? Because I think a lot of times, like, starting a new thing or really, and even just like Andrew starting the podcast, like when you're taking these little ideas in your head and making them like these big executions, like it can be, there's a lot of self-doubt. Like, hey, there might be a guest, you know, that you want to have this Soul Supper that you feel like is so out of reach, but you just send that DM anyway, just hoping that they reply. Like, what kind of gave you that confidence to take the idea from living room to venue?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, when I was speaking in the class, they asked me a similar question. And I think the quickest answer, and I'll kind of explain why I say this, is you don't build confidence, you build evidence. And when I had realized, you know, I want to lean into this Soul Supper branding and, you know, taking it from just my own kitchen table or my dining room table to actually like going to venues and, like you said, reaching out to guests, is I probably hosted 4 Soul Suppers where I had created all the brand materials. I had an office at the time when I was living in LA. And so I sat in my office, I took sticky notes and I put Soul Supper at the middle. And I was like, okay, what's my vision? What do I want to accomplish? What is my plan for the next year? So I did like January, February, all the way down to December to say, what do I need to accomplish every month? And I think when I say, what do I want to accomplish? I don't have an end goal for Soul Supper. Like I would love to focus on Soul Supper full-time one day and make as many connections in the world and have amazing suppers and connect with, kind of grow our community. But when I say accomplishments, it was like, you know, host a supper in New York, host a supper in Austin, things like that, where I think where you said the self-doubt is I tried to create parameters for myself where I wouldn't fail because I'm a first-time entrepreneur. Like I have never started my own thing before. I'm learning as I go. I have no idea how to file an LLC, but here I am. I filed a trademark. I'm not a lawyer. And so like you become a sponge. And like, I was watching so many YouTube videos on how to file a trademark, but I was just kind of learning as I go. And I think when I was taking a look to say, what do I want Soul Supper to be, is really where I was able to say, okay, what's my vision and how do I need to accomplish that? And there's absolutely been moments where I have not had confidence. There are moments where I've stepped into the room where I'm about to host a supper and I have self-doubt. But I think about the Jessicas, the people who I've connected through Soul Supper, almost kind of being in my corner in the back of my mind, where like, no, like you got this. Like I've hosted now, I think 15 suppers branded, like with brand partnerships and kind of people who make me say, wow. Where I'm like, no, I've built this evidence to have confidence in the room that I'm in now. And let's be clear, like Soul Supper has only been around for 2 years and there's still rooms and still things that make me not have confidence all the time. But I think if you have the mindset of like, no, like I need to stay true to who I am. I want to play my own game and really kind of do what I know best. And you have a strong foundation of what your vision is. I think you'll be able to go back to that regardless of if there's doubt or not.
Yeah. What for you has been the most rewarding part of Soul Supper so far? There has been maybe a conversation that you guys have had over a supper that made you leave the room and go like, "Wow, like that was like life altering," or maybe it was a connection that has come from one of the events that you've had so far. Like, what would you say has been some of those moments that have made you reflect on it and just be super proud?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's two. I think a general one is to be able to see the connections leave the supper table and flourish in our community has been probably the most rewarding thing. And I'll use Jess as an example just because of the I can't
Familiarity,
say
there you go.
it. Familiarity is she had just left House of Highlights and she's like, I don't really know what I want to do. You know, I want to consult, but I'm kind of unsure. And she had reached out to two people who own, it's called CCG Social. Their name's Sebastian and Karen. And she met them at a Soul Supper and she reached out to them. She's like, you know, I'd love to take on extra work. I'd love to kind of see what the possibility or the opportunity could be. And now she works with them and she does consulting for them. And I think that's just one example. But to be able to see that I clearly was successful in creating this community around our supper table to the point where they make this relationship outside of Soul Supper has been really amazing to see. And I've seen people from our community going to the beach together, you know, going to events together. And one of the beauties of Soul Supper is once you attend a Soul Supper, you get added into a group chat. And I think the Houston group chat's my favorite because they're engaged constantly. Like one person's having an event, they're dropping the event flyer in, or someone's getting promoted or getting engaged. And like everyone is constantly either sharing information, inviting people to places, or giving flowers to one another. So I think that that's probably the most rewarding thing is just watching the community that I've built be a community to one another and really show up for one another. And then from more of a granular perspective, I think this last supper I just hosted 2 weeks ago, and the conversation just absolutely made me say, wow, like you said. And I won't share what the conversation was. We try to keep all of our suppers intimate, so I won't share the details, but there were three people at the supper table who all had connected over a similar death of a family member. And it wasn't in a, oh, my family member also passed away, like I'm gonna one up you. It was one of the most authentic, I think, human experiences where it's like, you went through this, I went through this too. How did you deal with it? And how can I then go back to my family to take what you've experienced and help my family? And there were tears, you know, exchanged, and there was like hugs, and it was one of the most beautiful things where I realized that like the supper table shows up for one another. And there was then dialogue after of saying like, how can I help, you know, my family, or how can I, you know, show up better? And to see the community kind of engage afterwards of following up to say, you know, here's how I can help you, or what do I need? What do I need from my community slash what do I need to ask for? It was really, really beautiful. And so I sit back at supper tables where I'm like, oh my God, like this is happening in front of my eyes. And you're seeing dialogue and you're like, wow, like this supper table is really this foundation of connection. And you really just need I guess experience to be able to connect. And these people wouldn't have connected if they weren't at the supper table, which is really cool.
That's awesome. I feel like this kind of goes back to the story I was telling about just the rarity of just kind of dinner, and some people have it, some people don't. But I want to ask you, Mac, like, what do you think is it about supper or sitting at a dinner table, or maybe it's just, you got the magic touch in the environment that you create. But I feel like just sitting down at a table, some of the most profound conversations, some of the most profound observations can be made. People open up in different ways just around dinner or sitting at a table and just the intimacy. What do you think, just given your experiences hosting these, what do you think is it about supper that makes people feel that they can kind of let their guard down and open up, whether it's over a meal or drinks or whatever the case may be? Like, what do you think creates that environment?
That's a good question. I think there's a few different things. I think food kind of like loosens people up. Like it's a very, if you think about it, it's not a professional environment. Like you're eating, like it's not professional. Like you can't eat professional. Like that's not a thing. And you are having conversation, and that's kind of why we eat family style, which is you're able to pass plates, you're able to find kind of connection and commonalities as you're passing plates of like, oh, that was really good, or oh, you should try that. And you immediately make a connection with the people who are sitting next to you. But then I also think too is you're around a supper table, and whether it's a curated supper table or not, there's going to be conversation. And I've been to supper tables, and I wouldn't even call them supper. It's just more of like an influencer dinner. Like those suck. Like everyone's on their phone, they're taking content. And so I think when you curate a supper table and you ask people to put their phones away, they're forced to communicate with each other. So I think that that's kind of the second. And then I think the third is just authenticity, is if you show up as your most authentic self, others will follow. And when you said, you know, is it me who's driving the supper table and the conversation? I think, yeah. And some supper tables, there's been people who like feed into it, and you can tell they're just like natural and they love doing it. But there's some people who are really uncomfortable. Like it's a public forum they're speaking in, you know, they're kind of scared to be vulnerable, and it's a scary forum. Like I have to say, if you're going to a supper table for the first time, not knowing anyone, like I don't want to tell you my deepest, darkest fears. And so I think as I've moderated and hosted these, is I just show up as my most authentic self. And sometimes if I don't always see that the authenticity is following, I'll share an intimate story or something that I'm struggling with to kind of open up and kind of break down the wall of like, this is what I'm struggling with, and like, I'd love your help. So I think that that's the third. And I would do self-promotion too, is if there isn't separate conversation that's really flowing, we created, this is our question card set, and there's 52 questions that we've curated to basically go from what's the number one change that you need to make in your life for the next 12 months to is there anything you need help with? And these questions have, I know that people have been using them, and they'll always message me and be like, I had such a great date, or I had such a great conversation with a girlfriend or a coworker, because these are all like, they're a conversation starter, but they also dig deeper. So if there isn't conversation that really feels authentic or transformative, you can have these to start the conversation at least.
Great.
How would you, being that you are like in brand, content, marketing, social, kind of like right at the intersection of like all four, really, how would you say that, and then too, it's funny that you just mentioned how like those influencer dinners where it's like not much conversation, really focused on, you know, the outfit, really focused on, you know, documenting the whole experience via phone. So I guess just being that you professionally, you are kind of at that intersection of all four of those things, brand, content, social, and marketing. How do you kind of be intentional about staying present in the moment? Like for instance, like let's say like you and your friend are at some really cute restaurant in New York, and you know, you want to take pictures of the plate, you want to do the boomerang of you guys cheering, cheersing, and like all that kind of stuff. Like obviously you want to get the content, but like how do you kind of like gauge, okay, I need to put my phone down, kind of like how you promote people at the Soul Supper to put their phones down. How do you kind of gauge that? Even if it's not a dinner, just you guys are going to the beach, whatever that case may be, how do you just kind of like manage staying present in the moment when, you know, professionally 8 hours a day, sometimes even longer, because with NBA you can be working 12 straight hours. Like 12, you're conditioning your brain 12 hours to be on the phone, get this content, get the best shot, whatever. But then in your professional and in your personal life, sometimes you got to put the phone down. So like, how do you kind of manage when to put the phone down?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think in whether I'm going to dinner with a friend or I'm going on a walk, I just went on a walk with a friend yesterday, It's just trying to be present. And I think if you're present, others will follow. It goes back to that, where we all have like almost a human behavior where we'll do what others are doing when we're in a really small environment. And so you don't want to be the odd man out. And so if you're the only one on your phone, you're going to kind of feel uncomfortable where you're like, oh, you know, the rest of my supper table or the girls that I'm walking with aren't on their phones. Like, I should put mine away. And there's definitely moments. Let's just say we're at a dinner and you want to take a picture of the pasta or the drink. Like, you do it quickly and you're like, oh, I still, you know, want to document that I'm here. And then you put your phone like face down. And I went to dinner with a friend this weekend and we did just that, where like we placed our phones on top of each other. And it wasn't even us saying, oh, we need to stack our phones, but it just kind of was natural. And, you know, you check your phone if you need to, but oftentimes I really only will check my phone if someone uses the restroom, but I really just try to be present. And I think in dialogue, when you are having conversation with your friends, like, you don't really take out your phone because you're lost in the moment. And then you'll find friends who, like, you're just on your phones and you're like, this sucks. Like, I want to go back to the friends that like I can be present with. And so I think that you'll find those friendships that you can be present and you kind of can disconnect from reality. And I think I use Jess as an example just because of the commonality, but her and I do a good job of kind of balancing the two, where sometimes we'll like completely rot and like we'll be on the couch and we'll watch a television show and we'll just be on the phone and like won't speak to each other. And I'm like, we live on opposite coasts. Like, we flew to see one another and like we're on our phones, and then we won't be on our phones the whole day and we're really present with one another. So I think it's just kind of how you show up in those situations and then how you kind of follow suit for the rest of the group.
Yeah, I love that. So I kind of want to get into the other side of Soul Supper, which is kind of the business side of it, because like you mentioned, right, you're a brand girl at heart. You were like, yo, I got a brand. I gotta figure this out. So my question for you is, like, how did you do that? Because I feel like for me, and even some, I feel like a lot of people that may not be, I guess, privy to the information and the experience that you have, people would think like, yo, you got to have 10,000 followers and make this amount of money to have brands partner with you and this type of stuff, right? And you've been able to create a event now and a brand now where, like, you've been able to partner with multiple different companies and brands that you've been able to align with your Soul Supper. So I want to know, like, when you were first starting, right, like, what does that actually look like in reaching out to a brand and saying, hey, this is what I'm doing, and then getting them to, like, you know, go along with it, you know, when you don't have the, hey, this is, we've had this person at the table, we've had this celebrity here, like, you know what I mean? Like, what does that actually look like in pitching these companies and getting them to partner along with it?
Yeah. The first thing is going back to the vision of, I very clearly laid out what my vision was. And in that vision, it was like, what color do I want to use? And like, you see that I like have Soul Supper green everywhere. Yeah. And so I realized that's the color that I want to have as my brand color. And I call it like Soul Supper green because it's forest green, and forests are super deep and there's depth and, you know, vulnerability in the forest, which is why I chose the color. Going down to that, I basically created in the vision like a brand guidelines of what I want my social media pages to look like. What type of content do I want to surround myself and create for the brand? So you really create this almost like a business plan in the way. And I have to say is, I was only about 6 years, 7 years into my career when I started Soul Supper. And so I obviously knew how to create a business plan or how to create a deck. But at the same time, it's like, I also don't know how to create any of those things, because like, I was just doing it for the brands that I was working for. And so I kind of took the skills that I had learned in my career and just brought them over, where I was like, okay, I know how to make a pitch deck. Like, I've done that for all of our brand partners at the league or when I was at Bleacher Report. So I almost created like a pitch deck in a way for Soul Supper that has who we are, our story, you know, the suppers that we've hosted, but then also what are our metrics, things like that. And like, we have like 700 followers on Instagram. Like, it's nothing crazy. And we built that from the ground up. And we don't have a blue check on Instagram. We don't have an influencer coming to our suppers. And so it really was an organic way to grow. And I think that that was kind of the beauty of Soul Stepper is we've never done paid marketing. We've never had an influencer. And that's why I wanted, that's what I wanted. I didn't want to just have it grow really fast and feel on like super unorganic. I wanted it to grow based on the community that we were also growing. So I think for the people who are either creating their own thing or wanting to go into a venture is really have a clear vision of what you want to accomplish. And then in that vision, it's also kind of like, what do I want my brand to look like? And I think a page to follow is Cul-de-sac Studios. It's a family friend of mine. He runs a creative agency and he does a fantastic job with just brand. And I realized brand is more important than this is what we're offering because, for instance, there are 10 supper clubs that I have seen on social, but it's like how we're not going to say, oh, we're a different supper club. Like at the end of the day, it's the same product, but it's what is our brand? And if you make your brand strong enough, the brand awareness is going to be so much stronger than the other 9 other supper clubs. Liquid Death is a good example of like Liquid Death is water at the end of the day, but they've created such a strong brand that like you sometimes will be in the water aisle and like you'll be like, actually, no, I want Liquid Death because like they have great marketing. And so that's how I look at it is just have a really, really strong foundation of brand and how I want to market and how I want to show up in rooms. And I think that that's the reason why brands have wanted us around with Soul Stepper is they realize it's really organic. It's an authentic brand. You're going to accomplish so much more than just like putting a price tag on it instead of actually like going through the experience and working with the community. Cause like you see, and Alexis, you said this is like the influencer dinners are so unauthentic and people are just worried about what they're wearing or you know the content that they're taking. Whereas like if I can get in front of a brand to be like, no, this is very purpose driven and this is why you should sponsor with us because you'll have more brand affinity. We're only going to partner with brands that like we actually love and are aligned with our values. And so if you do that, I think the brands will want us around with the product.
Yeah. So I guess my next question is like, when you're looking at which brands you want to reach out to, right? How are you as a founder, like making those decisions as far as like, hey, I think this company would align with our vision and this company doesn't, you know what I mean? How are you making those decisions?
It's a lot of the brands that I like, the brands that I use, or the brands that I follow. And I'm not going to follow a brand that has they're either like getting slammed in the media or they're just like I don't have good values. I think like especially when it comes to this kind of brands that we're looking to feature for product wise, like I've only reached out to brands that I love. Like Mirit Beauty is a great example. Like Mirit Beauty is woman owned. They have clean products. I love using their products. And so I only want their products to be in Soul Stepper bags. So that's an example. Another one, I think JP Morgan is obviously one of our biggest partners. And like JP Morgan is the bank that I use. And I have created such great relationships with a lot of the bankers and the individuals that I've hosted with. And I realize like they want to accomplish the exact same thing. And they're looking to drive connection. They obviously want to bring in more clients at the end of the day. It's like kind of whatever they're bringing back to the table from a professional standpoint. But at the end of the day, their values align. Like they want to create meaningful connection and be authentic. And so I think it's just finding the brands that I love in my own personal life and then reaching out to them. And it's all just been outreach. I don't have contacts at these brands. It's been like, hey, this is Soul Stepper here. This is who we are. This is what we're looking to accomplish. Here's our brand guidelines or our brand pitch deck. We'd love to partner with you. And we've probably partnered with 30 brands just based on outreach.
Yeah, that's amazing. Sheesh, man, that's awesome.
And
That's really
I only
awesome.
have one intern. So like all of this is just my own doing. It's like on weekends, like prioritize weekends if you have a side gig because I wouldn't be able to do work during the day just because I
Right.
have no time. Whereas the weekends, I don't have a life because all I do is Soul Supper. And that's when I do a lot of the outreach.
Yeah, I feel like This is like, dang, I feel like this is like a wild moment, but also inspiring because I'm hearing this and I'm like, I feel like for me personally, I'll just speak from experience. I feel like I get like intimidated when I think about this stuff because it's like, I'm a hooper, you know what I mean? I don't have any experience in brand anything. I don't know how to like, I just feel like when I think of like, okay, you got to reach out to these brands, like, oh, they're never going to respond or anything, you know what I mean? Like, it's just hard to even like fathom, like, so hearing you say, like, yo, I've worked with 30 brands is like, sheesh, like it's really doable. You know what I mean?
I disagree with what you said. I think all of us have a personal brand, but it's just willing to optimize that. And I think as someone who's playing, who's like, you are a notable player in a league right now. And it's like, you have your own personal brand. And I think just following what a lot of students in college right now have done with NILs is you could be that like bench player on a D3 school and like you're still getting an NIL deal. And so I think it's just optimizing it and finding brands that you love, that like you just love to use, and
Yeah.
then just saying, hey, my name's Drew. I play in Australia, or this is what I do. I run a podcast. Like, I'd love to feature the product, or we have these guests on and would love to either bring someone from your company on to talk through. And I think that that's the easiest way to do it, is like build up this podcast as your own personal brand, and then you also being a hooper is also like an added value. Like, I don't go into the room to be like, hi, I work for the NBA. It's like, oh, hey, I like founded my own company, Soul Supper. And that's just as exciting. Like, you starting your own podcast is just as cool as you being a professional player.
Yeah. Nah, I feel like this is like I don't know. I always enjoy having these conversations because I feel like I learned so much, but it's like a million different like light bulbs that always go off in my head. I think the next question I would ask you is like, in disclaimer, this isn't like you going into your financial pockets, but more so like when you're reaching out to a brand and I say, hey, I want you to sponsor like Soul Supper, right? What does that look like? Is it like, so I feel like people will think, dang, Mac, like you fronting all these costs. Are you renting out this a restaurant? You paying for these bags and this merchandise? Like, dang, that's a hefty tab. You know what I mean? But it's also like, okay, if you can get this brand and be like, hey, so and so, you can sponsor it. So like, you're not bearing the cost of these different type of things. So for the people who might not really understand how that works, like, what does that process actually look like when you're reaching out to these brands? Are they just cutting you a check and saying, here, we'll pay for X, Y, Z, or is it like, we'll give you this product? Like, how does that actually work? And for whatever you can't disclose without getting in any trouble, of course.
I was fronting the majority of, I still front the majority of the costs.
Yeah.
I won't front and be like, oh, I used to.
Yeah.
It varies. We have created a partner, kind of like a partner with us slide, where it's like, here are all of the opportunities that the ways that you can partner with us. And so you can be a sponsor at said amount, and we basically have the entire supper for your brand. You invite the people that you want to have at the supper table. We'll basically just curate this whole supper for you, and that has the largest price tag. And then you goes down to, you just want to be a sponsor, where we'll like slap your logo on our menu and on our branded materials, and you'll pay us a little bit less of a fraction of that larger cost. And then we have product donations. That's where we really have the majority of our partnerships, where we'll feature, a Carbone pasta sauce or Graza olive oil in our bags, and we give the bags to all of our guests. And that's just kind of a like, here are some of our favorite products, especially when it like surrounds with supper. We do a lot of like cooking brands that we work with. And so we put them in gift bags. And so it's a lot of product donation. And then as like another sponsor opportunity, we do a cheers sponsor, where you can basically come in, and it's usually alcohol companies will come in and either give bottles, or they'll pay for drinks. And so there's about four different tiers of how brands can and brands can partner with us. But it costs a lot. And it's hard, because at the beginning, when I was just hosting them, I was paying for all the food, all the branded materials, and that was super expensive. Now I kind of follow a, in terms of merch, I'll basically pay for like a lot of the upfront costs of like getting it printed and getting it shipped. But then I won't ship anything until I receive money from whoever the buyer is. And so let's just say, like, you purchased a hat from us. I won't order the hat from the merchandise or the manufacturer until you purchase it. And it really only adds on like a week of additional kind of lead time, but that allows for me not to like, I had boxes of hats because I all like ordered them up front and then just like sat in my room until I sold out, which was a few months. So now I kind of have said, okay, let's at least have 100 units to the side. And then as orders come, I'll start ordering, which has been a lot more cost effective than buying all of them up front.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. So I feel like, were these things that you kind of learned through your experience at the NBA, Bleacher Report along the way, or was this kind of like, because I feel like for somebody like yourself who this is like what you do for work. So it's kind of like you were mentioning before, it's kind of like boom, boom, I'm already doing this. I'm gonna just bring it on over here. Like how much of it was, I guess, kind of work experience versus things that you kind of just had to self-teach in YouTube University your way through?
I'd say it's probably 50-50. I think it's very easy. I work in brand sponsorships and partnerships, and my day job is creating content for brands, like easy. And I remember it was one of like the early partners I had. I created a post like reporting metrics deck and sent it to them. And they're like, "You have like 600 followers. Like, why are you sending this to us?" But I had it in the back of my mind, like, this is what brands want, and they want to see the value of their sponsorship or their product donation. So it's 50-50. A lot of it has been YouTube TV or YouTube, I get YouTube University. I also think, and it goes back to the collaboration piece, is I've been able to learn, and I think, like I said, just be a sponge in so many different conversations. And I think the more suppers I host, the more people have ideas for me. So I think it's that. And then I think it's not just self-taught, but it's also my parents. My dad's an entrepreneur, and my mom has worked in marketing for her whole career. And I ask them questions all the time. I'll call my dad and be like, "How do I do tax? Like my ta sales tax." I'm like, "How do I do sales tax? It makes no sense. Do you have to pay sales tax in every state you operate in?"
Right.
And I'm like, "How am I supposed to do this?" And so the amount of phone calls that I've sent or I've called both my parents with questions with SoulSupper, it's funny. And my dad's like, "You better start writing me a check because you took my supper idea," because he cooks like every meal in our house. He's like, "You've taken my supper idea and now I'm giving you free business advice." He's like, "Cut me the check." And so it's a little like self-taught. It's learning as I go of like, "Oh no, made that mistake. Like, can't do that again." So a lot of trial and error and then YouTube and then a little bit of business as well, just what I've learned in my career so far.
She's I got my notepad out right now. I'm like, oh, okay. Noted. But I guess last thing I want to ask you about in regards to SoulSupper, because I do want to talk about the NBA, which is a whole amazing job in and of itself. But I kind of putting the ball on SoulSupper. I know you said that you don't have I guess like an end goal when it comes to SoulSupper, but I do want to ask you, I guess, reflecting back on where it started. Right, versus where it is now, and you've expanded to different cities, and you've been able to have all these different breakthrough moments and conversations and connections that have come from it. How do you reflect on what you've been able to create? Right, like when you kind of look at it from a bird's eye view, what does SoulSupper mean to you? How do you reflect on what you've been able to accomplish with it thus far? And maybe not a goal for going forward, but do you ever think, like, man, just I can't. I feel like this could be some in my mind. It's like, yo, 10, 5, 10 years from now, the amount of connections that could come from it, right? The amount of relationships, the amount of breakthroughs, the amount of jobs. Somebody say, hey, Mac, like, y'all got a job from attending a SoulSupper, right? Like, these are the type of things that I feel like are on the way when you think about the future of SoulSupper and things like that. Shoot, maybe a wedding, right? You might have a SoulSupper wedding on the way. Somebody meet in
Love
the
that.
restaurant. But just, I know. Not asked you, but how do you just reflect on all of that?
I'll answer the reflection piece first, and then I'll talk about some goals. I started this as a passion project. Like I had no expectations going into it, and I'm also my biggest critic. And so I think as I reflect just on the last 2 years, I have been able to accomplish more. And I said I did a vision planning almost like a planning session where I was like, what do I want to accomplish? And I have a photo of it. And like, if I go back to the photo, it's laughable, where I'm like, I was selling myself so short when I was doing this vision planning. And like, here I am now. And my mom always kind of brings me back to reality, where she'll be like, what does your 16-year-old self think? And like, think about as you're making these choices and building this brand. And even in the MBA, it's like, I'm my biggest critic, and I'll get upset and I'll be like, oh, it wasn't perfect. Or, oh, I'm, you know, pissed about this. Or I'm struggling with this. And my mom's like, think about your 16-year-old self. Like, I was like extremely bullied in high school. I was significantly depressed. And my mom's like, your 16-year-old self would be screaming internally knowing that this is what you've accomplished. And I think just a piece of advice for whoever is listening is like, don't be so hard on yourself. And like, you have to show yourself more compassion and grace, because I'm doing this for the first time, but I've been able to accomplish so much. And so I think reflecting, like, it has been such a joy to not only create a community that I didn't have. And like, I went out, I didn't have a community, so I went out and built one. And so I think there's moments where I'm like, oh shit, like, I actually do have a community, and I actually am like doing well, and I've built this amazing brand. But I'd say like 60% of the time I'm totally in doubt, where I'm like, I'm going to give it up. Like, it's just not working. And then that 40%, I'm like, no, my 16-year-old self's proud of me. So I think that that's the reflection piece. And then from a goals perspective, I'd love to start hosting for more big brands. I think I've really been able to see so much success come from the JP Morgan sponsorship or the partnership. I'd love to go in and host like for a Bumble or for an Apple or a big brand to come together as like more of a corporate team to say like, what are you struggling with? Or how can I show you more empathy? Because I think at the end of the day, that really, I think, will help just from a business standpoint, understanding the people that you're working with. So I'd love to do that. We have merch coming. I think I showed you the hats, but we have hats, and then building out some like cool hoodies too. So doing that, but I'd love to do more hosting and more cooking. And so trying to create a cookbook, and we have this thing where every single person who attends a Soul Supper gives us a handwritten recipe, and we're building a cookbook out of all of them, which has been really cool. So working in on that. And then hosting too, I think just trying to show people that you can host. And what Alexis was saying about her mom is like, her mom and her would eat in the backseat of a car. Like, hosting doesn't need to be glamorous, but you just need to kind of know how to do it. So also trying to build some of that out. But as you said in the beginning, is like, it's a human connection brand. It's not just a supper club, because we do so much more than like just host suppers now.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I feel like I can't wait to see, you know, what comes from Soul Supper. As you know, I'll definitely be watching and tuning in for sure. But definitely just want to say congratulations on that. And I think it's amazing what you're doing. And I can't wait to see, you know, what comes next.
I'm excited for you to get to one.
Yes. Claiming that in the future. Yeah. Once I get back from Australia, I'm going to make my way over there. But I want to ask you, so just as cool as Soul Supper and everything that you're doing with that, you have an equally as cool job with the NBA, which is a dream job for a lot of people. And I mean, you work with a plethora of huge brands, from Fox to NBC, Bleacher Report, Spring Hill. Like, what has that been like? I guess we'll talk about the NBA specifically, like being able to work for the NBA, and I guess obviously being at All-Star Weekend and create a bunch of different events. And I feel like even I talked up on your story the other day about Jenny, and it was crazy, a brief little tangent. I would have my mind going over different places. But I'm watching a vlog on YouTube the other day. I'm watching Jalen Williams from the Thunder. He has like a YouTube channel. And I'm watching the YouTube channel out here in Australia in my house, and she's like interviewing him and Chet. And I'm like, is that Jenny? Like, dang, like, that's crazy. I sent it to her. I'm like, yo, like, dang, look at you out here. But I feel like working for the NBA is such an awesome experience and an awesome job to have. And I just want to give you the opportunity to talk about, you know, what that's been like for you. Just being able to work for a platform like the NBA and have some of the cool experiences that you've been able to have.
Yeah. I'll start with my experience and then I'll jump into kind of my experience currently. I have always wanted to work in sports. Like, I wanted to go into the agent route kind of earlier in my career. And my mom was the one who kind of told me, like, okay, maybe like pause on that. Like, you don't want to be a glorified babysitter. And she's like, and my mom had worked in marketing and she said, why don't you basically work in all of the different verticals of marketing? So I worked in social media and partnerships and PR and kind of et cetera. And I realized what I liked and what I didn't like. And I realized I really, in my kind of work to want to be an agent, I realized like I loved working on the player marketing side and finding kind of strategic partners and brands to endorse our athletes. And in that, I realized I loved storytelling. And so I was in my master's program and I took a class, it was sports partnerships, and I loved it. And we had to serve as a brand, and we chose Lyft, and we basically had to pitch our sponsorship to a NASCAR. We actually ended up pitching to NASCAR, which was pretty cool. But in that class, I realized like this is exactly what I want to do because I'm able to tell a great story, whether it's content or if it's an ad, and I get to work with brands, and whether it's a brand partnership, I get to work from a brand perspective, and then I also get to work with brands as well. And so I think that that mindset, it allowed for me to go into Bleacher Report and just absorb as much information as possible. And Bleacher Report was still like this huge media company. It hadn't been bought at that point. And so was really able to, it was kind of like a startup mindset. And I was on the integrated strategy team. So it's basically what I do now, but we had like 20 people on the team there. And so they were looking at content and brand partnerships as a content play and storytelling, and like what stories can we tell for these brands? And I really loved the perspective there. And I think that that's what drove me to want this role that I'm in now. When I left Bleacher, I went to Fox Sports and I liked working at Fox Sports. I didn't love it. It was difficult because we only had a few partners and I was working more on the production side. So producing more of like the 30-second, the 60-second docu-series type of content. I realized like I hated production, and the NBA's always been my dream job. Like I would never have thought in a million years that I would have landed this role that I'm in now. And when they called me, I kind of laughed. I was like, "Wait, you're reaching out to me?" I'm like, "This doesn't make sense." And I didn't really understand the full scope of the role until I got into the role. And I realized it was basically the exact same team that I was on at Bleacher Report, but yet they didn't have a blueprint yet. It was one person who was doing it prior to me, and they gave me autonomy to build the team out that I have now. And not only do I love my team, like my team are, they're all girls. Like we have such a little badass girl gang of people on our brand content team. But I think also, and it kind of goes to what you had sent to Jenny is like, we have so many bright, like-minded people who work specifically on our content team, but I think at the organization where we're all young, we're all kind of, we all get it. We all are in our dream jobs and we get to do what we love to do every single day. And so, yes, there's days where I'm like, I have 40 partner activations at All Star, and like I don't get to go to the Adidas party or like whatever that was. But to be able to do what I love every day, that makes up for that sometimes. And I think from what I'm doing now is we're really trying to tell better stories for our partners. And I've really loved the leadership and the autonomy that I've been given to build this team out. And it goes back to what I was saying is like my 16-year-old self would be screaming, screaming. Like I'm in my dream job, I live in my dream apartment, and it's taken a lot of adversity to get to here. But like now I'm here and I'm like, I never want to leave. I love the role. I love the people I work with. And like it's very rare for people to say that. And so I know how blessed I am for this opportunity, but it's just been an amazing 2 years.
That's awesome. What would you say has been your favorite project you've worked on or favorite experience that you've had since you've been working at the NBA? I also love your backdrop, by the way. This.
Thanks. I Sho Shibuya did these. I don't know if you are familiar with him, but he paints the New York Times whenever there's like a big current event. And he did this collection. There's 55 of them. I just don't have all 55 on my wall. He did 55 sunrises and sunsets, and it was his Art Basel collection. And so for Christmas, I got all 55, which has been really cool.
West.
Big art collector, love supporting arts. Best project I've worked on. That's a really great question. At the league, my favorite partnership I've worked on, probably New Balance. Actually, no, I'm gonna like completely pivot. New Balance, we did this like really great storytelling piece. It's called Pass the Rock. We did it with Tyrese Maxey. I loved building that out. I think my favorite project though is Nike Airtime. We just launched it. We've only had two episodes or two shows, and it's a live show in studio, but it's an alt stream. So if you have if you're an NBA ID member and you're a Nike ID member, you can connect your accounts to then get access to watch these alt streamed games. And we have three hosts. We have Alexis Morgan, Jamerson Green, and Kenny Beecham. And they're just like sitting at the studio, they're chopping it up. We have guests, like we had Coach Calipari come, we had Sean Marion. We had like three or four W players come on the first one that we did. Tyrese Haliburton pulled up. Like, we've really been able to create this awesome show, and it's just kind of trying to promote the connected membership of NBA and Nike ID members. And it goes back to like my 16-year-old self. I'm like, I have been able to create this partnership with Nike and be able to create this experience for fans. And that has been like the coolest thing for me is fans actually get to come to the studio show and to watch how excited fans are to come to this and excited to like engage with the partnership has been really, really cool to see.
That's fire. Yeah, I feel like that's literally like a dream job. You know what I mean? To be able to, like, I don't know, do that every day. I think my question would be, given like the place that you've been able to work, right? Like, is there any advice that you would give somebody who's trying to like secure a job at these platforms? I mean, you mentioned obviously the NBA reached out to you, but I think if we reach out to you, they have to be able to look at your resume and say, oh, dang, she worked at Fox, or dang, she worked at Bleacher Report, Spring Hill. Like, she has these experiences, these internships. Like, what do you think? I guess, what advice would you give to somebody else who's trying to maybe secure a job at the NBA or at one of these large corporations to try to get their foot in the door?
Yeah, that's a great question. Twofold. Relationships matter the most. I said this to the class that I spoke in is relationships, it's a relationship game. And so early in my career, I try to meet and connect with as many people as possible. Like my LinkedIn connections go crazy. And I was just reaching out to people to say, hey, I just don't want 15 minutes of your time, and really just trying to pick as many brains as possible and absorb as much information. So I think that that's one. And then I think second is it's the work ethic that you have. And I've been able to work at those big brands because I guess like my career kind of started. I interned at NBC Sports and then I interned at LAFC like shortly after. And I've really been able to differentiate my portfolio. Just like I've worked for a media company, I've worked for a sport team, a league, et cetera. And I realized like what I like and what I don't like. And that took the work ethic to figure out that I didn't like that or I loved that. And so I think it is just putting your head down and grinding and showing the work that you can do. And I think brands will see that and be like, oh wow, like she got to own this project or she raised her hand for this opportunity and crushed it. It's whatever you make of it. And when I say that, it's like the work ethic you have is just trying to do as much as you can. So when the big brands do come calling, like the NBA, I can be like, oh yeah, I've done this, I've owned this. And they're like, oh yes, this is who we want on our team.
So I feel like I can sit up here and talk to you for hours and hours, but I'm gonna ask you one last question, and then we're gonna have some fun and have a couple quick hitters and wrap this up. But what I want to ask you is, given your experience with obviously the NBA, right, and content, Soul Supper, right, tying it all in together, right? I think when you're producing content, right, and you're especially branded content, your goal is trying to reach people and connect with the audience, right? That's kind of the overarching goal when you're doing this stuff. And obviously with Soul Supper, you're connecting people and audiences and things like that. So My question for you is, what does the overarching theme of just connection or connecting mean to you? Because I feel like whether it's your work with the NBA and the production that you do with the NBA, or whether it's your passion for dinner and food, right? There's an overarching theme with just connection and bringing people together. So I want to ask, like, what does that theme just mean to you overall?
You have me at a loss of words. Authenticity. It's just staying true to who I am and what I know. And I think that shows not only in the boardroom or in the conference room, but also at our supper table, is like, I really try to be authentic and stay true to who I am and the morals that I have and what I like and what I don't like. And I think that sometimes you have to be uncomfortable to grow. And in that uncomfortability, you're like, okay, like, I don't like this. Like, I know I don't like this. And how can I work so I don't have to do this again? Or, you know, work with this person again or whatever it is. Like, you're going to have people who you don't like to work with, or you're going to have brands that, you know, make your life not hell, but like, they're just not fun. But at the end of the day, it's like, if you are authentic to who you are and you stay true to, you know, what you love or who you are, it's going to be so much easier, because you're going to attract the people that you want to attract. You're going to try to work on some cool things that like you love to do, because you're really trying to work at that. And the universe will take note. And like, I don't know if you've read The Alchemist, but it's my favorite book. And there's a term, and it's an Arabic term. It's called maktub. And that means it is written. And so I think in what connection means to me is, I think it's like staying true. It's being authentic. But at the end of the day, it's written. And if it's meant to be, it'll be.
It's a
I have one question for you before we do quick hitters.
Yes, yes.
So at every Soul Supper, we do two things. One, we ask every single person what is the best piece of advice they've received. And then afterwards, I'm going to ask what your superpower is and what your ask of me is.
Okay, so first one is, what is the best piece of advice I've ever received? Ooh. Dang. He put me on the spot. You know what's crazy? So you and Jessica, man, y'all something else, because I had a bunch of podcasts and she asked me a question too that made me stop and think. And y'all two are the only guests that I've had that have like asked me a question. And it's crazy that y'all really locked in.
That's love that.
Because I'd be having to think, well, best piece of advice I've ever been given. I think it's not necessarily like a piece of advice, but it's more so like a saying, I guess, that I guess always just grounds me. And I was listening to this sermon, and it was by a guy, his name is Mike Todd. He's a pastor down in Oklahoma. But he gave this sermon, and the whole thing was like, here is holy. That was like the name of the sermon. And it was essentially like, be where your feet are. But what it meant to me was more so like, at the time, I remember I was in Portugal at the time, and like, I was going through a breakup. I was like alone across the world for the first time. And I felt like everything was just like spiraling, you know? And it's like, I have an identical twin brother also, fun fact. And it was like my first time being like away from my twin brother for that long, who I came out the womb with. And it was just like, I just felt like everything was just going wrong. And when I heard the sermon, it was just like, here is holy. Like, and it was like, I was so concerned about getting home and like getting back to the States and returning to a sense of like normalcy and comfortability and getting onto my next opportunity. Cause even at the time, like, basketball wasn't going great. Like, I wasn't playing the amount of minutes that I wanted to play. The coach wasn't really rocking with me. I was like, yo, like, all right, my agent, like, where are we going next year? Like, you know, find me something else, you know? And I remember I just heard the sermon. It was like, yo, here is holy. Like, at the end of the day, you can't be so concerned about what's next or where you're leaving, or everybody's so concerned about, even like, I'm in this interview right now, or kind of talking about, yo, I'm trying to partner with this brand. I want All Facts to be here. Like, I want this podcast to be this. And we're always thinking about what's next, what's next, what's next. And it's like, the whole premise of the Here Is Holy was like, yo, sometimes God is trying to make you focus your eyes on where you're at right now. And he's trying to teach you something right now because maybe there's a habit that you have in this season of your life that you can't take to where he's trying to take you, right? If I gave you the platform that you want to have and the money that you want to have and the lifestyle that you want to have with the behaviors that you have or the toxic traits that you have right now, you're going to fumble it and you're going to crash and burn. So like where you are right now is exactly where you're supposed to be. And instead of you focusing on what's next or what's going wrong, ask yourself, what lesson can I take from this? Like, what is God trying to do in my life and in my heart right now to show me and reveal in me that when I do get the blessings that I am asking for, I handle it properly. So I think that's something that I've always reminded myself. And when I went to Japan and played out there and even out here, when I feel like lonely, I always, all right, like, here is holy, like, here is holy. I always come back to that, like, every time when things get rough. And I think that it's not necessarily advice, but that's like the most meaningful, I guess, piece of just, I guess, a phrase or something that has just meant so much to me and has helped me just stay grounded throughout turbulation and just trials and tribulations, excuse me, when things go wrong. I'm like, all right, like, here is holy. Like, what are you trying to show me? What are you supposed to learn in this season of your life? So
Have
this is,
you read The Alchemist?
I have not, but I'm gonna have to at this
You
point.
have to read it.
Okay.
It's whatever, all the things like you just said, it's The Alchemist.
Wonderful.
So you have to read The Alchemist. It is about a boy who goes on a journey. He has a dream about buried treasure. He goes on this huge journey of his life, and it talks about how like you have to be where you are right now, and you've made these decisions and the universe, and it's kind of it's a spiritual book. They talk a lot about God, but it's not, you can read it and like you don't have to be affiliated with any religion. And it's interesting the way that you say it is like be where your feet are or here is holy. And it talks a lot about that, where it's like you just have to be current and present and you have to listen to the things around you. And there's this one like passage in the book, and it talks about there's this kid who's going on this journey, and he goes to this like wonderful king's house, and the king's like, come back to me in an hour, but hold a spoon and there's liquid in the spoon, but go around and like look at my beautiful palace. So the kid like goes through the palace, he comes back, and there's no liquid on the spoon. And or I'm sorry, and I'm sorry, the king said none of the liquid in the spoon can drop. So the kid comes back, and all the liquid's still in the spoon. He's like, well, did you see all of my beautiful tapestries and my paintings and my gold? And the kid's like, no. And he's like, okay. And he's like, well, go back and do it again. And you need to like kind of take note. So the kid goes back, and he comes back, and there's no liquid in the spoon. And he's like, well, you have to pay attention to like you're almost like you're the spoon in the way where it's like you have to take care of yourself, but then you also have to be aware of your surroundings and really like take it all in. Just kind of a reminder of like always like absorbing information and looking at the beauties around us, but then also like staying true and like keeping what you hold close to your heart too.
Yeah, that's so good.
Have to read it.
I'm gonna have to read that book now for sure.
Okay, so then last two questions. What
Yes.
is your superpower? And like not superpower, like you can see like through people. Like,
Yeah.
what is your superpower currently? And like what you do great? Like my superpower is connecting people. And then what is your ask of me? Like, how can I help you? Or what are you asking me to help you with?
I think superpower. I think my superpower. I think like I've always been just like a big personality in a way of like not necessarily connecting people as far as like in the way that you do it, but more so like I can go to a new place or a new environment and I'm not like kind of in a shell. I can like meet new people and connect with other people. So like
Adaptable.
yes, I think I can like kind of fit into a bunch of different environments just based on how I've grown up. And I think that I'm grateful for that because I think that I've been able to just come across a lot of people and have a lot of meaningful conversations and not necessarily be shy or worried about like what people will think of me and things like that. And it's allowed me to have a lot of just breakthroughs and just a lot of meet a lot of people along the way that I feel like have been so valuable to my life and so impactful. And that's something that I want to hopefully continue to be better at and just continue to be a better communicator, and just figure out how I can take that and then help other people as well. You know, that's kind of the next step is I think, how can I bring other people along and things like that. But I feel like, I guess what my friends tell me is like, yo, like, you know, whenever we're around Drew, like, it's like, oh, like I'm always meeting somebody else. Or, yeah, you know, this person or that person. It's like, you don't necessarily think about it, but it's just like, I don't know. Like,
We even did that at All Star.
yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. But I think that I'm grateful for it though, for sure, because I think, I feel like I wouldn't have met you if it wasn't for that, you know, and just being able to come up to somebody and say, hey, like I love what you do. I'm a fan of what you do. You know, I think that that's something that I'm grateful for sure.
I love that.
And ask. I think for me, I guess my ask of you would be just to like be a mentor. You know, one thing that I've learned is that like you have to ask somebody who you can ask questions to. And I think a lot of times, like for me, this is something that I'm kind of stepping into new territory. Like, and similar to you, I'm like figuring all this stuff along the way as far as media and same thing. Like, okay, I'm a media platform. So do I need to get an LLC? Do I need to get like a, something else? Like, I think there's a bunch of different terminology or like, I'm in the process right now. I have my best friend, Erin. She's actually putting together like a pitch deck for us. So like, I would love to like
Fantastic.
see yours as an example and be like, yo, like, all right, how do I kind of make ours look similar? You know what I mean? But just somebody who I can like just ask questions to and like lean on for advice, and things like that. Because I mean, I'm not afraid to say that I'm a big fan of what you do, and I feel a lot of people don't even want to say that. They have too much of an ego that they look up to somebody or they're a fan of somebody or they admire somebody's work. And I think you're somebody who does amazing things and it's someone who I can learn a lot from, and I would love to just pick your brain on what you've been able to do and see how I can apply that to what I'm doing with All Facts.
Absolutely. You have my number.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it, man. This is, I don't know, this is what I love about this community. It's All Facts and having a podcast and just meeting people. It's like you never know people you can come across and just a genuine conversation that you can have. And likewise, I know, like I said, I don't have as much experience as you have, but if there's anything that you need as well, just connect to somebody or have a question, whatever. I would love to learn how we can work together and partner something. You know what I mean? Whatever the case may be, I would love to just be a resource to you as well. Are you in New York, by the way, or LA? You're in New York. Okay. Come like I heard you. I know you said you're from Cali
I'm
originally.
from California. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, not too far. So I'm born and raised in DC. But I spent a lot of time in between New York and LA everywhere. So I'm sure I'll cross paths with you for sure soon. Love that. Love that. All right. So get some quick hitters and then we'll get you on out the
Sure.
door. I know you're a busy, busy gal. So you said that you love to cook. So I want to know what is the favorite dish to chef up in the kitchen?
I just posted it. It is called, we call them Sloppy Johns. My dad's name's John.
Okay.
So we call them Sloppy Johns. It is a take on a Sloppy Joe, but it has biscuits on top of like the Sloppy Joe mix.
Love sloppy
That
Joe.
one's I think the fan favorite. And then I think my family's favorite is every Sunday. My mom used to make this. It's kind of like a rice pilaf situation, and then it has like mushroom, almost like a chicken marsala on top. It is hands down my favorite meal. It's my comfort meal. It's every Sunday we had that growing up. So those are probably my two go-tos.
Okay, love it, love it. What is the favorite meal that you've had at a Soul Supper, like that maybe a restaurant has provided?
Tough one. Probably this last one, we went to Colonial Verde, which is in Brooklyn. It's like a small owned community focused restaurant. And so they do Latin inspired foods. So probably that one.
What was the dish?
They had steak chilaquiles and they were so good.
Okay, love that.
I rarely eat during soul suppers. Like I'm moderating and talking so much that I don't. And someone was like, you have to try that. That is so good. So.
Love that. So L.A. and New York, right? They're two kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. But if you had to pick one place to live for the rest of your life,
New York.
ooh, you said that
Not even a question. I hate LA.
really.
I went to school there. I lived there. I don't like it. Especially when it comes to Soul Supper. Like, I have some really amazing friends from LA who still live there. Love them to death. That's their choice. I love it here. I just feel like there's grit, there's just like there's authenticity, there's a realness to New York that like you just don't get anywhere else. New York's the best city in the world.
Oh wow, that's a heavy statement. See, if we had another hour, I'll debate you on that, but I'll let you have it today. Yes, I'll be nice. Wow, though, that's awesome. So also, you went to LMU? Did you go to LMU? So that's crazy. So okay, so my best friend Isaiah, he was at All-Star Weekend, but he wasn't at the event that I saw you at. But he literally lives in Westchester, right around the corner from LMU, like literally like right by the airport. That's actually crazy.
That's where all of our houses were. Like when you got to move off campus, everyone moved it to the back gates.
That's crazy. So yeah, that's where I stay when I live in LA. So that's super small world.
Yeah, that's so great.
So in preparing for this episode, of course, I had to do my research going through your Instagram, and I saw a picture on your Instagram way down at the bottom. It was like ended up at One Oak, and this is the One Oak in Tokyo. And I had to ask you about this because I played in Japan for a year and a half, so I spent many nights in One Oak in Tokyo.
Fun
So,
to ask you what promoter you use, but this is a professional podcast.
I have to ask, what were your thoughts on One Oak, on Tokyo? You know, your thoughts on the
I went to Japan because I studied abroad. I did semester at sea, and so Japan was one of our stops. If I could move, like I say New York's the best city in the world. If I could move anywhere, I'd move to Tokyo. I think
Tokyo
it's one of
was
my favorite places.
amazing. That's my favorite city in the world is Tokyo. I love it. I loved it. Loved it.
It's unlike anything else. It's clean, it's convenient, it's so ahead of its time. Like I love, love, love Tokyo. My brother actually just went and he hated it. It was crazy. I was like, how could you hate it? It's
How's that
the
possible?
best.
What did you do?
I
Who did
know.
what?
Clearly, he clearly didn't go to One Oak.
Clearly.
My experience there was like I was already here and I was familiar with One Oak in LA and here, and we had been in Japan. And I don't know if a promoter had reached out to me, but they're like, oh, like there's a One Oak here. I was like, we're going immediately. Like there's not a question. And all the girls I studied abroad with, they weren't familiar because like they went to school in like Virginia and like Ole Miss, and I'm the only one who like knows New York and LA. And so I like introduced like 10 girls to One Oak and like changed life with like bottle service in Japan. But I loved it. I loved One Oak there. And that's like it was a peak of the trip for sure.
Core memory. Oh, I miss it.
Core memory.
I gotta go back. I gotta go back. I gotta go back. I'm talking to my teammates in the group chat literally right before I got on with you from Japan. Like, oh, y'all might tell my agent I gotta make a return. Okay.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. And if you're there, I'll try to come visit because I, any excuse, I'll go.
Oh, for sure. We're gonna make it happen. We're gonna make it happen. Oh man, but the last question we always ask all our guests is, who should we have next on the What's in Your Bag podcast? And whoever you say, you got to get in your point guard bag and give us the assist and help us get them on the show.
Can I give you two?
Of course, the more the merrier.
I'm going to show love to Max Hazard, who founded Brandscene, who also works at Clutch. And I also then will throw a lob to Winston Nelson, who also works at Clutch, but he is a moderator from the Point podcast with Trae Young. So I'll connect you to both of them, but just really good people to also have.
Yes, would love that. I seen both of them at Tyrese's party on at All Star on Saturday. So hopefully we can make that happen. That'll be huge. That'll be huge.
Did I
But
see you?
you were with Juju, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
I was like, I don't remember seeing you. And I was with them like the whole night on Saturday.
I might have a video of you on my phone. I'll show you when we stop recording. I might have a video.
Well, those are the two I would suggest. I'll set it up with them, but two just great humans.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, Mac, I just want to say thank you so much for your time. Shoot, we've been on it for about an hour and 40 minutes. It didn't even feel like
I
it.
know.
I just want to say, I know you're a busy girl, so just from the bottom of my heart, it means a lot that you took the time out of your day on a Monday to come on and talk to us. I know Alexa had to run. She had a work call, but she wanted me to let you know that she was also appreciative of your time, and it was a wonderful time meeting you as well. But I just want to say, again, like, I love what you're doing with Soul Supper. I can't wait to see where it goes. I can't wait to hopefully attend one in the future. But just thank you for being who you are. Thank you for being a genuine person, a connector, and somebody that so many of us can look towards to continue to make this world a better place. So I just want to say thank you for this coming on today, and it was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. Those are such kind words. And likewise, I feel the exact same way as, as we met at All Star. I was like, oh yeah, he's someone who I'm gonna have in my corner. And so I have loved getting to know you, and I really appreciate you having me on.
No doubt, no doubt. Until next time, I'm gonna run this back, you know what I mean, a few down the line, and see the latest Soul Supper updates. Sure.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. This has been another episode of the What's in Your Bag podcast presented by Bet Online. Again, guys, make sure you're liking this podcast, subscribing to this podcast, telling a friend to tell a friend. It goes a long, long way. This is gonna be my guy, Pull Up Tay, on the outro, folks. Until next time, peace. Suave, 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 suave,
suave. I've been in my bag for a while, I'm invincible. Story of a young boss, grinding shit critical. Calling on my bros one time, cause you special. I had some hood dreams of right rounds for my mentor. Every target that I shoot is on point like a pencil. Different route, change relationships, I'm so sorry. Came up from the trenches and I made it, I say hardly. Now.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.